I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Monday Night Football at Arrowhead? Where else would you rather be?
First down and goal to go at the one. They're going to throw it. Near side it is. Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City! Travis Kelce! 1, 2, 3, 4 touchdown receptions! Carr's under pressure. Throws it up for grabs on the near side. It's intercepted! Intercepted by Brian Cook!
Listen to Chiefs and Bucks right here on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Since the first edition of the humbly named Josh Briscoe Show, here's what you've missed. I mean, hopefully you didn't miss it, but here's what I've missed. DeAndre Hopkins, Kansas City Chief. Kansas City Chiefs, 7-0 with a win over the Las Vegas Raiders. Josh Uche, you say? He is a Kansas City Chief, and thank goodness we're going to have a good couple of hours to break it all down with you right here on 96.5 The Fan. I am Joshua Briscoe, James Howe on the other side of the glass. We'll talk to Jordan Foote of SI Chiefs coming up here in about an hour as he will continue to put some of the most fun things from this week into context. We'll get specific about Uche, and yes, Joshua Uche is how he said to pronounce it. So I've been trying to do that, even though I'm always battling a name of some sort. I got really good at saying Suamata Ia for him to not play very much. Felix Anudike Uzama, a good effort on Sunday. And then this new guy, DeAndre Hopkins. Ah, damn. We'll talk about Uche and everything that he brings to the table over the course of the show tonight. But I want to start big picture with something that covers all three of those moves. DeAndre Hopkins, Josh Uche, Chiefs beating the Raiders. I guess that's not really a transaction, but it's all tied together by some similar stuff from me. And I was thinking about this early and trying to decide like what I want to lead off with in the show tonight, and understanding the fact that, again, many of you may have heard me from radio or podcast or whatever. Many of you may be, again, still wondering who this guy is that said Snickers were overrated during the drive today. I said what I said. I do not know if Carrington will allow me back on that show again. I don't know if anyone here is going to allow me back on anything. And maybe that I've said it twice now, maybe the torches and pitchforks will begin to gather. James, if you see anything resembling torches and or pitchforks outside the studio during the show today, I need a heads up.
Oh, I got you, brother.
I can either sleep here or maybe you can help me run a distraction after the show. So far, so good. But, there's a lot of great candy in this world. And I think it's not totally fair that Snickers essentially exists as the unquestioned number one overall candy bar. They get all the advertising. They get all of the fame, all of the notoriety. I just think they're a little overrated. A good candy, but a little overrated.
Kit Kats are phenomenal, by the way. I just wanted to chime
Thank
in
you.
And say, like, I have your back.
Thank you. Whose voice is that on the side of the glass
this
there?
This is Nick Price.
Thank you, Nick. I'm trying to say your guys' names as much as possible. Then we're all going to... This trifecta here, we're gonna make something special radio-wise or something inconscionable candy take-wise. Here's the thing. Snickers, goated. Reese's Cups, goated. Twix, don't at me, S tier. Snickers are a good candy. If you want to talk yourself into eating like a Clif bar, but you're lying to yourself. I've grown to appreciate, I swear I was going to talk about the process over the course of the segment. I've grown to appreciate Snickers more as I've matured, as my palate has grown. I'm going to have a little sweet treat. I want a sweet treat. I also like dark chocolate, though. We could do 2 hours just on candy. And we might. You can also text in as, by the way, the majority of the texts over on the text line. I see that there was a lot of candy-based conversation on the drive. And then a very apt and correct text about how good Justin Reed was. Previously, and now we're back around to Candy takes 913-586-7965. Snickers tastes a little chalky and the peanuts get stuck in your teeth. A Milky Way with peanut butter would be goated. Let's talk about more peanut butter candies, please. Give me a Milky Way with some peanut butter. I think Three Musketeers are underrated. Give me, I think Twix with peanut butter might exist somewhere. I'd like that, please. Every version of Reese's Cups would be fabulous. Also, a great text. There are a bunch of interesting flavors of Kit Kat in Japan. This is true. I've eaten many of them. Not in Japan, but from Japan. I could talk about Kit Kats for hours. And don't tempt me. We won't have this show on Monday night next week because Chiefs and Bucks will obviously be going at this time or about to kick off at this time. But we'll be have the show Tuesday, the day after, which also has, you know, it's trade deadline day. And then also America has a lot going on Tuesday. If there's not enough football to talk about, we will just do candy talk for however much of that evening is necessary. There's going to be a lot happening. Nick has just exited. Thank you, Nick, for providing your appropriate and correct candy take. Again, James on the other side of the glass. I'm Josh Briscoe. It's the Josh Briscoe Show. Here's the little thing I want to plant in your head, aside from all the great candy talk. I will take all the texts, please. So many candy texts are coming in. It makes me so happy. I feel so at home. Three Musketeers are underrated. Not the best in the world. They're underrated. The little fun size, pop one bite in, it's a good bite. Ice cream Snickers, very good. Twix ice cream bars, the best. 100 grand, underrated. I'm just responding to takes in the chat or in the text line here. Keep sending in your candy takes. I'll respond to them throughout the show. That's the promise I'll make for you. But I want to talk about what I think for me was the easiest way for me to get behind the Josh Uche trade today. And the thing we saw in the Hopkins trade. And the thing we saw in the win over the Raiders. And that's process. Like most great candy bars, processing is an important part of the production. Not the process, but a process. Especially in talk radio, especially in any form of analysis, the results are what matter, but the process is what we have to talk about. We can't judge the results before they pay off. But what do we do in the meantime? It's, of course, silly to, you know, for example, grade a draft class the day after the NFL draft. We don't know if that's going to be an A draft, a B draft, or an F draft. We don't know about any of those picks individually. But we can't just say, all right, well, they've drafted Xavier Worthy, and we're going to wait 4 years, then I'm going to tell you what I think about the move. What we can evaluate is how you got from point A to point B, how you made the decisions that you've made. Evaluating with the information that you had, just as the team had to do. Teams don't get to know how a career is going to go. They have the information in front of them and they have to make a choice. Similarly, I think in this industry and then also for sports fans in general, you're going to react with the information that you have and then judge the process that got you there. Here's where I think the process of what the Chiefs have done over the last week does to support these moves. What the Chiefs have done twice in two trades, and maybe they'll make another move before the deadline. Again, Tuesday would be the last time to do it. I imagine they'd like to see one more game or figure out where Nazi Johnson's at before they make a cornerback move. I think there's a chance, though. What the Chiefs have done twice already in these two trades is pay reasonable prices for bolstered depth that benefits others. DeAndre Hopkins, you saw a smidge of this yesterday. We'll see a lot more of this as the season goes on. DeAndre Hopkins moves everyone else in the wide receiver room down a peg. You don't have to rely on Xavier Worthy as your only legitimate wide receiving threat. You don't have to rely on Travis Kelce as your only legitimate move the chains threat or the only guy that you trust to set in the zone or be on the same page with Mahomes. It really it knocks everybody in the receiver room down a peg and also smooths out the burden over even, let's say, Kelce and Noah Gray. For Joshua Uche, whenever he gets into the rotation, he becomes a weapon at another thinner group that doesn't really have a player quite like him. FAU is a work in progress and I think has shown some growth this year, which I don't want to completely undercut. And Uche is a free agent after this year at this point, so there's no guarantee that he'll be involved beyond the next, whatever, 10 games or so. Malik Herring had a couple great shedding block run stop reps yesterday. George Karloftis is out there all the time. Even getting him an extra breather or two, I think, is a good thing. And Charles Omenihu should be back soon. Mike Dana, dealing with the injuries right now. Not sure what his prognosis is, but obviously he's not on IR right now. So the Chiefs are presumably expecting him to be out for less than 4 weeks on this current injury. Missed some time earlier in the year also. We'll see where he's at health-wise. But there's a chance that Uche comes in and very, very quickly becomes a pure pass rusher on a level that this team has had some difficulty pinning down, partially because of the guys that Spags likes in that role. He wants to have guys who are bigger, who are longer, who can set the edge, especially when you have Chris Jones in the middle. Anything you can funnel into him or any matchups that you can take advantage of while Jones is getting all the attention, win, 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 win across the board. I want to pick another move that was bad process, good result. I'll also say, one guy I didn't mention, the Chiefs traded a 7th round pick for Cam Thomas right before the season started. Former Cardinals, higher draft pick, change of scenery type of move, defensive end. Cam Thomas, I think good process, bad result here. They gave up a 7th round pick early, right before the season, as you know, basically jumped the waiver wire because they didn't think Thomas would go unclaimed as the Chiefs waited from 32 on that list. They trade for Cam Thomas. He's active 3 times so far this year in the 3 games that Dana has not been active, and he has played 3 defensive snaps, 3 defensive snaps, 0 defensive snaps. I haven't seen a second of Cam Thomas in practice. I have not heard a second of him in meeting rooms. I haven't heard his voice. Maybe did he do a presser right after he was acquired? I can't remember. I have no further evidence on Cam Thomas. All I have is what the Chiefs have shown us, and what the Chiefs have shown us is that that guy is not that guy. We're getting Neil Farrell again, where they give up a pick. Also, keep the Neil Farrell trade in mind. We're talking about Uche. If you want to make sure you're not just Pollyanna-ish throughout this entire process. But if Cam Thomas was promising, they wouldn't have needed to make a move for another pass rusher. I'll get more into the specifics of why I like the pass rush acquisition next segment. But a bad process, good results move, and I mentioned talking to Carrington earlier today before he banned me for my Snickers take. I just don't like the idea that it's like a meal replacement. I don't. But I said, look, the Mecole Hardman trade last year bothered me because it was bad process. The Chiefs misevaluated Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, what that year of MVS was going to look like, and so they end up acquiring Mecole Hardman in season because they misevaluated the guys that they had. They could have just kept Mecole Hardman around. He didn't leave for a huge payday like Juju did last free agency cycle. He was out there a long time on the market, Mecole Hardman. And the Chiefs said, well, we need somebody who can know what's going on here. And these dudes, these other fast little dudes, have not been paying off. We'll give up a pick for the Jets. You don't want them anymore. We will use them. And it did pay off. Not just the walk-off in the Super Bowl, but he was a useful piece, even getting back into the swing of things. And he's been really useful this year. He's been more productive for this team so far this year than he was last year, even, you know, including the fact that he wasn't on the team for the beginning of last year. Not accounting for that. That was a process that frustrated me, but the results ended up being a real win. No one's unhappy with that Mecole Hardman train in retrospect. The Chiefs throughout this pre-trade deadline process have operated with a process that raises the water level for everybody with pretty meager costs. That's all you can ask for. The wide receiver room is too thin now because of the injuries that have happened. They had a much better plan than they did last year. Bad luck, injuries, it happens. How are you going to adjust to that? DeAndre Hopkins is a really, really good answer to that question. The edge group, it was invested in. I thought they might draft somebody this year, in this last draft, to try to continue that development process. But Felix is not really the guy you want him to be after, you know, for a late first-round pick, even though, again, I think he's moving in the right direction. Last year was terrible. This year's been fine. B.J. Thompson almost died this offseason. That's not anybody's fault. Charles Minnehu tore his ACL in late January. That sucks, but isn't anybody's fault. Mike Dan has had some little bumps and bruises that have kept him out of a few games so far. That happens. You realize the group's not quite where you want it to be. You want to have an extra gear you can use when a Minnehu comes back. You want to maybe take a little bit of that load off George Karlaftis' shoulders. Yeah, 2026 sixth round pick. That's okay for me when you're quarterback by Patrick Mahomes, probably in your last year or two of Travis Kelce, Andy Reid, and the entire squad trying to three-peat. I would not feel good about the Chiefs having, I don't know, packaged two first-round picks to go get Myles Garrett. I'm not sure. It would have been fun. I'm not sure it would have been smart. Hopkins and Uche both. Fun, smart moves. Not mortgaging your future. Bolstering what you've got now. Improving your team immediately. Those are all good moves for a very good team that's trying to three-peat. And if you disagree, maybe you're a little bit grumpy. Maybe you should have a Snickers.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
A lot of sweets here today in The Josh Briscoe Show. I am, in fact, Joshua Briscoe. James Howell on the other side of the glass, DJing, making sure we're on the air. Hopefully in a second, playing an audio clip. Because in the, I haven't even gotten to the part with the Chiefs beating the Raiders that is a very process-oriented game. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But I want to at least give you what I think is the most interesting part of this Joshua Uche trade that that we hadn't already covered so far. And, you know, when you get an opportunity to hear directly from the person responsible for drafting a player, that's usually pretty interesting. When you get a chance to hear from the guy who coached a player most directly over 4 years, that's usually pretty interesting. When that man happens to be Bill Belichick, I would argue you need to hear what that man said. And so in a masterstroke of convenient timing, Bill Belichick was on the Pat McAfee show today, and he talked about the Chiefs acquiring Josh Uche. He opens here by acknowledging the fact that it is a 2026 sixth round pick that the Chiefs gave up for Uche. And I figured you may want to hear from the most decorated head coach in football history about what this player can bring to the table. Here's Bill Belichick talking about Joshua Uche. That is two things in there that I think really jump out as to why this move makes a lot of sense no matter how you slice it. One being that Belichick mentions there that Uche has surprising power given his frame and his measurables and all of that. The ideal Steve Spagnuolo edge rusher barely passes as a human being. They're closer to alien given the opportunity, right? Give Spags, you know, Tano Passanio, and I think he would have probably been able to mold that clay, so to speak. But you typically have to have enough power to be able to set the edge. As I mentioned earlier, it's one of the reasons that George Karlaftis always made sense in this defense, and it's one of the reasons that Felix Anudike Uzama was a surprising pick on some level, because he's a different type of player, still working on those pure pass rush moves and pass rushing with the plan and his get off at the line, all of those things. But Uche clears the bar of not going to put you in a bad position by being on the field. And to be clear, I don't think that FAU or Malik Herring have been like an attackable part of the Chiefs defense to this point. Sometimes you get a guy out there and go, hey, we got somebody a little bit light in the pants. Let's just run the ball right that direction. Let our offensive line put him on a blocking sled and let's just see how far we can go just running directly at this guy. That's not, the Chiefs don't really have that problem right now, which leads me to the second point. I think the Chiefs are the best team, at least in the AFC. They're probably the best team in football. I'm not even trying to like debate it. I'm just cutting it in half to the AFC. because I watched that conference closer, and you only have to beat one NFC team to win the Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. Most accomplished, most decorated, best in the big moments, et cetera, et cetera. Don't think it's particularly close. Clearly the best team in the AFC. I thought that before this trade, just as I thought it after. The DeAndre Hopkins trade moved my belief in the Chiefs' offense in the long term, raised the ceiling, certainly. I think Uche raises the ceiling of this group a little bit, raises the floor a little bit. That's great, but it doesn't change my perspective on the Chiefs' defense. It's already probably the best defense in football, which is an amazing thing to be able to say. But as Bill F. Belichick mentions, you know, the team that needs another pass rusher, everybody needs another pass rusher. You get an opportunity to give a guy that you think could be an impact player to Steve Spagnuolo, who is also, I think this is a hugely important part to where the Chiefs are now. This may not have changed with the Nazi Johnson concussion that he suffered yesterday. Maybe they still would have made this move if Jalen Watson was healthy. But you know what's Joshua Williams' best friend, Chris Roland Wallace's best friend, hopefully soon again, Nazi Johnson's best friend? Good pass rush. And while the Chiefs do have Chris Jones, who demands so much attention from opposing offenses, nightmare fuel for offensive coordinators, you have Chris Jones in the middle of all of that. But you need guys who can take advantage of their one-on-one matchups and guys who can win in some different ways. Guys who aren't all necessarily clones of each other. That having a type makes it a little bit easier to go next man up, even though you're certainly going to have your drop-off down the depth chart. Building out a little bit of variety, a little bit of versatility, again, hoping that Mike Dana's back healthy pretty soon. He has inside-outside flexibility. He can set an edge, and he can win from the edge with effort and a little bit of time if Chris Jones is demanding some attention and the corners are holding up. Felix, in theory, you'd like to see that first step speed up and have him be able to win a little bit quicker. Chris Jones can obviously win in an instant when he is able to just swim through a guard. George Karlaftis, effort, motor, consistency, that's how you get there. If Uche can show up and start winning off the edge with some relative quickness and relative frequency, his entire defense gets better. If all he does is help flush out a pocket a little bit, perhaps into the waiting arms of George Karlaftis, his entire defensive line looks significantly more productive. We talk about this pretty often on the offensive line, not often enough on the defensive line. It's a team sport down there. It really is. Not just with your stunts and your twists and all of that, not just with the matchups that a guy like Chris Jones creates for everybody else. But if you have both of your edge rushers win at the same time, there's nowhere for the quarterback to go. Or if the interior is pushed back by Chris Jones and Tershawn Wharton, while Uche gets a nice shot off the edge, George Karlaftis' job is no longer beat this tackle, have three consecutive stacked up pass rush moves, swim to the inside and be waiting there and deliver a hit on Baker Mayfield on Monday night. Now all of a sudden his job is get big, George, just be a net, and you're going to catch these fish that get swam right in your general direction. Complimentary pass rush. It's all intertwined. And I promise, if you're just hearing me for the first time here on 96.5 The Fan over the last few weeks, the guest spots and this show and last week's show, you may be under the false pretense, the false belief that I do not care about draft picks, big or small. And that would be incorrect. I care about sixth round picks. I care about seventh round picks. I care about 2026 picks. I really do. I would tell you if I thought this was irresponsible or a mistake, any of those things. But it goes back to the process. The process has been good here for the Chiefs. They have maneuvered in ways they need to make sure their Super Bowl window is just as wide open as it was in training camp. That's a hard thing to do without your number one and number two wide receivers. You also want to do that without completely mortgaging what's next. The Chiefs have not had that problem. They've paid off that supremely so far. And I'm really happy with the way they've gotten from point A to point B to this point. We'll talk a little bit more about the Raiders and a little bit about some other things that went into that actual Raiders game. I didn't think we were going to be here talking about a New England Patriot for the first 30 minutes of the Josh Briscoe Show, but hey, everybody, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. Everything's weird. I got to make sure we have a respectable segment length here because we got to be ready for 8 o'clock. We'll talk to Jordan Foote of ChiefsOnSI.com. I wanted to return to the text line as well. Please go ahead and fire away there. 913-586-7965. A lot of candy takes I want to get to. Also, a couple of tweets I've gotten fairly, but to me hilariously, about the fact, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that Joshua Uche has asked to go by Joshua, and that the last name, which sort of looks like maybe Uche, he had a softer pronunciation of Uche. I'm trying to get that right, trying to get names right, all of that. Did have a couple of people tweet me. Then my tweet about tonight's show, so we're talking about Josh Uche and DeAndre Hopkins and Chiefs Raiders, and then have a couple people be like, excuse me, he did ask to go by Joshua. And I, Joshua Briscoe here, the host of the Josh Briscoe Show, am familiar with the idea. The name of the show was collaborative. Speck and I talked about it. I was like, all right, listen, Speck, if my mom is listening now, she may now know that she can turn her ire towards me. I said, listen, I think the Josh Briscoe Show, I think, sounds better than the Joshua Briscoe Show. It's just an extra little syllable in there and a lot going together. But all my written, like, bylines and stuff, like on ChiefsOnSI.com, since you asked, I'm always Joshua Briscoe on social media or my bylines or anything like that. But typically in conversation, I just go by Josh, unless you are family or specifically my parents. It was always very much, I was a Joshua kid, but then I continued growing in the way that most children tend to, and I met other people who just began calling me Josh. Again, I have no vitriol towards that whatsoever. It's completely fine. It is most of my first name. You can call me Jay or JB or JBB, or lots of people have called me Briscoe for long stretches of time. That's all fine, but I did just want to get out ahead of the fact that I'm aware that Joshua Uche would like to go by Joshua, and that if I call him Josh in passing, I do very personally understand. I understand the mistake I am making there with a level of firsthand experience that I very rarely have. A couple other very important Halloween candy takes here from the text line. Peanut M&M straight out of the freezer.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Goated. That's very exciting because you may not get this from my general ambivalence towards Snickers, not dislike, ambivalence, that I do love peanuts, peanut butter chocolate, all stupendous. Someone said caramellos are divine. I don't know what a caramello is, but it sounds like some sort of caramel marshmallow. That's very exciting. It's a Cadbury thing. You know what? I've had one of these. It's a caramel filled Cadbury bar with, I think there's squares. Here's another thing. My mom has texted me that she is in fact listening. Hey, I was going to text you about this, but I forgot. Renee, my wife, found tiramisu Dove chocolates individually wrapped with like a tiramisu filling, which is usually like a caramel. I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that's good stuff.
All right now.
So, Mom, I know my name is legally Joshua, and most people know that, and I'll go by either, and it doesn't bother me. That's totally okay. But if you are upset by the fact that I did decide, like, you know what, I think the Josh Briscoe Show is the way to go, chop off those last two letters, I hope you know that in return, I'm trying to share with you the knowledge of the tiramisu Dove chocolate. I hope that helps bridge the gap. My mom is a huge tiramisu fan, as am I.
Well, there you go.
Trying the
Mama Briscoe, there you go.
Trying to give back. There's a lot of texts now that have come through together. Cookie M&Ms, very good. Crunchy M&Ms, good. Peanut butter M&Ms, I think actually my favorite. I think my favorite M&M is a peanut butter.
I would put that in my top three.
Overall candies or specifically types of M&Ms?
Types of M&Ms.
So James, top three M&Ms, go.
Okay, I like the peanut M&Ms.
Good.
Then I like the originals,
ooh,
and then it's the peanut butter.
Okay, that's good. Yep. You ever mess around with the pretzel M&Ms? It's a textural experience.
No, I don't think I have.
I'd say to try it. Have you ever tried the brownie M&Ms?
Yes. Oh, they're so good.
They're good and they're bizarre. They're a culinary confusion and perhaps a masterpiece.
Yeah, 100%.
This may be me turning into an older man right in front of my own eyes, but I do think I prefer a smaller fun size bar, a mini if possible, or like with the M&Ms, if I can, this also might be partially the diabetes and me needing to like know how many carbs I eat and whatnot, so I can take enough insulin to not die from it. Die slowly. It's not, you know, if I eat an M&M and I forget about it, I'll be okay for a little bit. But, if I can just, once you pop, you don't stop on a little bowl of M&Ms or maybe a few different variety bag sort of mini chocolates.
Sure.
That's where I want to be.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I want to be. So text your favorite candies to 913-586-7965. We need to take a break, and I think this was a perfect segment of radio. When we come back, I'll tell you something I thought was interesting from Chiefs Raiders, or depending on how the text line goes, maybe James and I will just talk about our favorite candies a little longer. It's the Josh Briscoe Show. Sorry, Mom. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 of The Fan. I am, in fact, that one and only Josh Briscoe. Joshua, technically. We covered that last segment. We'll talk to Jordan Foote of ChiefsOnSI.com coming up at 8 and kind of pick his brain about what he found most interesting out of the Chiefs-Raiders game, the Joshua Uche trade, the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Obviously, that feels like a long time ago now. And then actually what DeAndre Hopkins did yesterday, I think, is vital to where the Chiefs are headed right now. Talked about it a little bit at the beginning. And you know what? Let's talk about him again now, just a little bit here. Get you the DeAndre Hopkins assessment. Here's what I'll say about the game. I finished rewatching it. That was the last thing I did before I left for the station here tonight. And I was going to do it earlier, and then the Chiefs just kept doing things. It was a busy, busy day. DeAndre Hopkins was better than you thought. I hope that's exciting to you, because holy bleep, it's exciting to me. I imagine, I can't know exactly how you felt about the trade, but I would imagine pretty confidently that DeAndre Hopkins was better yesterday than you expected him to be in his first few snaps as a Kansas City Chief. And I think DeAndre Hopkins is just going to be even better than I thought he was going to be. And I already thought this move made a lot of sense. There are a couple of things that stood out that go far beyond Hopkins's box score, which totally betrays what his day actually was. Now you get the first down chain moving play. You get the barely missed connection breaking towards the sideline later in the game. You get a handful of moments here. That first drive that ended with the Kareem Hunt / Trey Smith touchdown rush. That happens because the drive got extended twice. First on 3rd and 7, Mahomes to Hopkins, first target there, first down. And then later, Mahomes scrambling and then finding Samaje Perine, that little floater. The next drive is when Mahomes missed Hopkins on the corner route against cover 2, as Trent Green discussed on the broadcast. I'm going to talk more about that broadcast crew and the uniforms later, but I'm saving my aesthetic breakdown for later in the show. And then the drive stalls out. Wanya Morris gets beat, which we'll also talk about throughout the course of the show. And that never should have been a third down play if Mahomes and Hopkins are slightly closer to the same page on really just like what angle Hopkins takes out of his break. The more important thing on that play was that they were really, really, really close. And they practiced together twice. And that was his second target in live game action. This goes back to something that Andy Reid said last week after the acquisition was complete, saying that Hopkins, despite the fact that he certainly, you know, had not played in an Andy Reid offense, that he had seen so much and that he knew so much, and he'd been in the league now. This is his 12th season. Andy Reid said that for DeAndre Hopkins, it's more learning a dialect than it is an entirely new language. That's a big deal. The biggest deal is going to be some of the stuff that happens live in real time that I think we've all gotten a lot wiser about over the last several years. I remember asking Andy Reid about this before the Chiefs-Titans AFC Championship game, all of the sort of zone manipulation and Reid and Mahomes and Kelsey and their relationship in particular. And there was some conversation about it before then, but it feels like it's come a long way since that day. When DeAndre Hopkins reads a defense as the play's happening, and Patrick Mahomes reads the defense, and they end up on the same page with the same result, that is a victory. That is a sign of things to come, and it is an early sign that this is not going to be a long learning process, not a high learning curve for Hopkins getting involved. He also got involved plenty. He was out there a lot. A healthy snap count diet. I think it ended up putting him behind Watson and Worthy, but out-snapping the rest of the crew there. Now, even as thin as it is, that's Mecole Hardman and Montrell Washington, I suppose. But what Hopkins was able to show within the flow of the offense, what Mahomes is presenting, and frankly, the frequency in times that Hopkins was open and Mahomes didn't go to him is in no way concerning to me. It's actually thrilling. The Xavier Worthy contested catch that he couldn't quite bring in. Mahomes might have been a little late with the football. I was kind of going around on Twitter today. And obviously you'd like to see Worthy be able to haul it in. That's not really his game right now. We'll see kind of, there's some more Worthy stuff going on that I think is interesting too. But Hopkins was open on that play. On the touchdown to Travis Kelce, a good read and a good delivery by Mahomes, he could have taken his pick. He could have taken his pick of 30 and over in the end zone. Hopkins, Kelce, both had their angle, 6 points either way. I think I'm glad that Travis Kelce got his first touchdown of the year as the Kansas City Chiefs before DeAndre Hopkins did. That would have felt kind of odd. So I have no issue with that. But they're both there, both open, both available.
My fantasy disagrees with you.
Hey, listen, the Travis Kelce fantasy owners have been working through some things this year anyway.
That is true. He's been off to a really slow start as far as fantasy production goes.
And I don't think that's a coincidence.
Really?
That's part of how all of this has come together for me. So I also wanted to talk about Travis Kelce, and since we're here, James, I think we ought to.
Man, why not?
The ongoing overreaction to him having like a handful of poor fantasy games to start the year was always silly. I've tried at every turn to be as responsible in that conversation as we can be. He is 35 years old. He is still playing a bleep ton of snaps, by the way. He is a different player than he was 5 years ago, obviously. But there was a little bit of momentum from some of the just absolute worst, air quotes, thinkers in national media. Well, you know, he was flying around all offseason just drinking cocktails and going to shows. You know, does Travis Kelce really want to be out there anymore? Is Travis Kelce looking a little chubby to anybody else? All of those things were such hot nonsense that I like to think that most people around here were able to see through that for what it was. Travis Kelce was out there for pretty much every rep of training camp. He's been out there for an enormous number of reps so far this season. And the weapons around him have been dropping like flies. It was evident to me, especially through the first few weeks of the year, the first 3 weeks of the year, I guess, when Rashee Rice was healthy, the offense was pivoting to, I don't want to necessarily say run through Rashee Rice, because I think really the offense runs through Patrick Mahomes in a way that making it about any of the pass catchers kind of misses the point on. But Rashee Rice was going to be the guy with the volume stats. He could get open in the short to intermediate. He could be there consistently. And when he's doing that, Travis Kelce's life gets easier. Now, look, Travis Kelce was on the field for way more than just DeAndre Hopkins' snaps on Sunday. He has been opposite big Juju Smith-Schuster games, or at least one big Juju game where he didn't have to go off because there was another option that was feeding off of the attention that Kelce had gotten. But at so many turns this year, I thought it was pretty obvious that Kelce's problems were the offense's problems. It was the congested feeling of everything being so tight. Or instead of a Travis Kelce red zone touchdown, it's another field goal you settle for that makes that final score more frustrating, that makes the red zone patterns more frustrating. That by and large, Travis Kelce looks like, 35-year-old Travis Kelce, but 34-year-old Travis Kelce was a masterpiece, especially when come playoff time. He didn't forget how to play football or that he loved football over the course of this very busy offseason for him, admittedly. I just think that there were a lot of people that were looking at those fantasy lines, looking at those box scores, and trying to come up with an understanding of, yes, it was a slow statistical start for Travis Kelce. I don't think he played noticeably better yesterday than he had played through the first act of the season. He got the football more. Mahomes was returning to him in a very standard Travis Kelce game that, again, we had not seen yet. You can't do this every week. You don't want to do this to Travis Kelce every week. You didn't want to do that to him last year every week. But Kadarius Toney was a disaster. Sky Moore did not take a step forward. MVS took a step backwards. And all of a sudden, a busted knee, injured foot Travis Kelce is dragging the offense behind him through so much of last season. The offseason plan here was trying to make life a little bit easier for him so he can start to look like the freer, spryer version of him that we've seen so many times. Maybe I'm repeating myself because this is the same takeaways I gave you on the offensive line and the defensive line and so much of the defense and all the pass catchers. But it is all connected. It is all intertwined. When Chris Jones or Travis Kelce have a quiet game, ask yourself what you think the most likely reason for that is. Most of the time, that most likely reason is going to be because they're the thing the opposing side of the football is planning to stop. Again, it's not completely true when Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes said that Travis Kelce was always getting double or triple teamed a few of those games earlier in the year. Not always the case. This version of Travis Kelce should not be asked to be Superman. But I'm also not telling you he has to be Robin. I think he could be Batman, a mortal without superpowers, a great brain, and still able to be out there. I think Bruce Wayne was doing it into his late 30s, right? That's what I'm asking for. Travis Kelce spent a lot of time as Superman. Doesn't need to be Robin. Just let him be Batman. Just not from a literal different planet. Not literally, not unkillable, not inevitable. Just a human being who plays like a superhero. I don't care if that makes DeAndre Hopkins Robin or Kareem Hunt Robin or what that makes Patrick Mahomes or Andy Reid for that matter. The analogy really falls apart immediately after the Superman to Batman thing. I also can't really explain Batman versus Superman. That gets confusing. But I think as DeAndre Hopkins becomes a bigger and bigger part of this offense, you're going to see Travis Kelce's life get easier and easier. As his life gets easier, God forbid they do get Hollywood Brown back somewhere around Christmas, you can see the offense begin to return to form a little bit after they've learned that they can still win with a running game and a defense. That defense isn't going anywhere. Theoretically, Isaiah Pacheco should come back and add even more to this offense. And the Chiefs have just become even more versatile. We'll talk about it more with Jordan Foote of ChiefsOnSI.com coming up next here on the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan, talking about a whole bunch of Chiefs-related things. Also, the text line has been completely devoted to Halloween candy talk to this point. 913-586-7965. Go ahead and hop in over there. And if you need to either get a candy take off your chest or take issue with one of mine, that is the place to do it. But we'll talk mostly Chiefs here now with Jordan Foote of ChiefsOnSI.com. You can follow him on Twitter at FootNoted. I believe Jordan to be amongst the absolute best of the best when it comes to knowing everything that's going on with the Chiefs, keeping an eye on all of that. got, keeping you informed, keeping the website updated, and also just generally knowing ball, which is why my first and foremost for you tonight, Jordan, is how has the new Call of Duty treated you? I'm really curious, but I wasn't really a COD guy. New one's out. How are we feeling about it so far?
How it's treated me versus how I feel about the game, I think, are a little bit far apart still. I'm no longer the kid or, you know, even college, 18, 19, 20-something. I'm now, you know, halfway through my 20s, still trying to keep in touch with the ability to be acceptable at a Call of Duty game, when in reality, probably not the case. They introduced a new movement system where people will literally jump around corners and shoot while in midair at you. So that's been an adjustment. It's all new. It's still fun. My spirits haven't been beaten quite enough yet to where I'll stop playing. Now, if you ask me again on November 28th instead of October 28th, maybe that's a different story, but so far so good.
What was the Call of Duty game that you felt like you were at your peak at? And then how old were you at the time? Because I have almost sworn off, certainly competitive shooters, I just don't think I have that in me anymore, or if I ever did.
Yeah, so for me, I think it was Black Ops 2, which I think was the fall of 2012, so I would have been 13 at that point, and we played that for, man, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, all throughout high school, that was just one of the best games ever, and I'm more of a sports game guy through and through, as you probably could have guessed. Little bit of, you know, Grand Theft Auto, stuff like that, but we've been plenty of Call of Duty. That was definitely my peak, which now is 12 years ago, so that doesn't make me feel one bit old at all.
The youngest person currently having anything to do with terrestrial radio, perhaps, but still understandable. You know what we got before GTA 6? We got DeAndre Hopkins catching passes in a Chiefs uniform. Listen, some of these things you and I have personally talked about, but I'm going to pretend that we haven't discussed any of this for the sake of the listening audience. What do you make of what the debut was like for DeAndre Hopkins? I think, as I've tipped my hand earlier, I don't think the box score, the stat line, quite does his day justice. Was that more than you expected in his Chiefs debut?
Yeah, a little bit, snap count wise, and I think production wise, and really, again, the numbers, like you said, do not hold a candle to what he actually did. It's what he didn't do in the box score that I think stood out the most to me. Getting open, Mahomes overthrowing him a little bit on that corner route. Mahomes immediately owned up to that after the game. Getting open on the third down play where Xavier Worthy had a shot to get to it and just couldn't come down, which maybe there's a larger conversation to be had about Xavier Worthy at some point. We could maybe peel that back, maybe not. He was open on that play with one heck of a route. The physicality, the footwork, just the attention to detail. His ability to settle into the soft spots in the coverage that the Raiders were giving them. The Kelce touchdown, he either opened things up for Kelce or just straight up got open himself. That was impressive. So he easily could have had 3, 4, 5 catches and a touchdown on Sunday. Looked very, very good. The meaningful football thing is always, I think, an underrated point. And people always say, well, you're an NFL athlete, you should be giving it your best. Think about a normal day-to-day job. If you're in a situation that you aren't, you know, absolutely in love with, the mind is going to wander, and you might not put that 1,000% effort into it. The MCL injury, he seems to be managing pretty well or completely passed. So everything lining up for a pretty impressive DeAndre Hopkins debut, and something that I definitely think leaves plenty to build on moving forward.
To your point about him mentioning that he hasn't played meaningful football in a while, and frankly, the way that he framed it, he acknowledged he hadn't played meaningful football in Tennessee. On the Kelce touchdown, when you're right, he was just as open as Kelce was there. On the Kelce touchdown, he comes up behind Kelce and starts pounding his chest. Not his own chest, Travis Kelce's chest. In a celebration that I haven't looked at all of his teammates' touchdowns from the Tennessee times this year, but I think you see enough Will Levis throwing passes to guys who aren't you, or realizing that this is not on the biggest stage anymore. To your point, NFL football players are hyper-competitive who are trying to be the best of the best on the biggest stages. There was not a world for DeAndre Hopkins to be meaningful DeAndre Hopkins in Tennessee. So I think getting this energy out of him, and then I think on some level, maybe we see it from Josh Uche as well. He played some good football when the Patriots were contending and had other talent around him. Kind of fell off in New England after that. Now he's going to be joining a Steve Spagnuolo defense. I feel pretty good about that factor as well. Maybe not the main factor to trade for Uche, but certainly I think a similar situation there. What did you make of that acquisition, as we were both a little caught off guard by that earlier today?
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty helpful, and you're giving up the 2026 sixth round pick. You're maintaining the future flexibility and draft capital. And you mentioned earlier the process with like a Mecole Hardman trade, stuff like that, where you're giving up a non-premium pick, but still doing it because other things on the team didn't necessarily go well. This felt a little bit like it bordered on luxury. I don't think the Chiefs necessarily needed help at defensive end. Charles Omenihu is coming back. Mike Dana doesn't seem to be seriously injured, just kind of nursing that pectoral strain. Felix Anudike Uzama has looked better in his second season, not necessarily perfect. But then the Cam Thomas move also happened, and he is out there on the team somewhere, I think. So they have help at defensive end. That's without mentioning George Karlaftis. That's without mentioning Chris Jones, any reps that he plays outside. Leo Chanel, who had a really impressive game on Sunday. This was a depth move. It was a versatility move, I think, with personnel. And there's no defensive coordinator, I think, that for my money is better at that and getting the most out of people than Steve Spagnuolo. The ability to win quick, the athletic profile, he's a little bit smaller than a typical Spagnuolo defensive end. So you're diversifying the personnel. You're maintaining flexibility. You have depth. And then I think also a pretty good insurance policy. Let's say Charles Omenihu doesn't look quite like himself when he gets back. Let's say Mike Dana continues to battle injuries because he's had the quad. He's had, I think, a hamstring or something. He's been battling, or was a calf earlier this season.
Right.
Been nursing a ton of injuries. So you have the alignment versatility up front with a bunch of guys. You have the fluidity of the athlete, and you're giving up a six-round pick next year for a guy that just took a bargain contract in free agency to go back to New England. So he's going to be motivated for a multi-year contract. If not, maybe that leaves the door open for something for 2025.
And the Chiefs will be out of the Omenihu deal at that point, or, you know, he's at least scheduled to be a free agent after this year also, right? It was a two-year deal originally. So the timelines on a lot of those moves make a lot of sense. We're talking to Jordan Foote. You can follow him on Twitter at Footnoted. Read his work on Kansas City Chiefs on SI. That's chiefsonsi.com. You may also stumble into a byline of mine or two. Something we haven't talked about at all yet on the show tonight that I wanted to make sure I made some time for, we might just have to do it now, is both tackles yesterday. I'll pull up the Max Crosby stat that I was absolutely flabbergasted to see, but I think pretty clearly we saw Juwan Taylor have a really, really good game, and Wanya Morris struggle against the Raiders again, although not necessarily because of Crosby. What do you make about both sides of the mix right now?
Yeah, I think Juwan Taylor has largely been, whether you look at pressure rate, whether you pull up the pass block win rate, he's been better in run blocking, I think. The analytics love him. The penalties this week were not a problem for him. So he played a very, very good game against probably the toughest matchup he's going to have all year. Like Max Crosby, a downright elite pass rusher in terms of the bag that he has, the toolbox, the motor, the relentlessness. He's going to be, you know, talking smack to you all game, like mentally and physically. I think that was a very, very tough challenge. All but three of his matchups against Crosby were pure one-on-one situations for that Next Gen Stats tweet. Mm-hmm. So very, very high degree of difficulty, handled it absolutely perfectly. I think for as good as he was, Wanya Morris, though, was almost as bad. Mm-hmm. This was a very, very, very rough game, and he was not facing Crosby the majority or every down. This reminded me of exactly what happened in week two when Trey Hendrickson was out there, a very tough matchup. Kingsley Suamataia basically got baptized by fire and was committing penalties. He was very visibly shaken, I think, out there, and the moment got too big for him. we saw Wanya Morris commit back-to-back penalties in that game and was not looking good, whiffed on the Tyree Wilson play and committed a penalty at the same time. Another holding penalty in the fourth quarter, hands down, his worst game of the year, I think, and it's something about the Raiders that just gets to him. But it was interesting to see Andy Reid come out earlier on Monday and just say, hey, we have to get the penalties cleaned up, but didn't really add too much on top of that. It's interesting that the rookie had, in his second career NFL game, something reminiscent to this against, I think, a superior matchup. And he got benched and has never been heard from since. Meanwhile, Wanya Morris seems to still have a pretty long leash on that starting left tackle job.
You looked at Kingsley before the draft, obviously a lot after that. Would you be itching to get him back in the lineup at all? Or do you think just let Wanya try to roll through this? Is it another game, a couple more games? Where's the leash for Wanya, and how interested would you be in seeing Kingsley get back out there this season?
Yeah, I think if I was running the team, and there are many reasons why I'm not running a team, my team would not be winning many games, but I would have him out there. Just the athletic profile, he loses quicker, I think, than Wanya Morris does from a technique standpoint, but also Morris just isn't the athlete that Sua Mataia is, and I think that some of that, it's hard to coach somebody while you're also putting them out in games. I think that you can do a better job impacting his play if he's just being the backup, focusing on being that. With that said, BYU, he just didn't have a ton of experience in an offense like Kansas City. Everyone said, oh, he was a starter on both sides of the offensive line. He played 2 years. Yeah, but the lack of true pass sets for him was pretty glaring. The stylistic differences were pretty glaring. He was never going to jump right in and be a tailor-made left tackle for the next decade in the NFL based on his early play. Now, the growing pains, it's kind of like when people outline a schedule before the season. They say, okay, the Chiefs will go, let's say, 14-3. Well, what three losses are you going to pick? Well, I think they're going to win every game. And you're like, you have to pick those. You know it's going to happen. You have to face the music. And that was the thing with him. Everyone knew the growing pains were going to be there. They knew he might not be ready early on. Then when he looked like that and resembled the underwhelming rookie, people kind of got mad, and Andy Reid ended up benching him. So personally, I wouldn't give Morris a very long leash. I don't think that Tampa Bay is going to terrorize him necessarily, but I would be at least keeping an eye on throwing the rookie back out there.
They clearly drafted him for a reason, and to your point, I don't think anybody should have been surprised by Trey Hendrickson being a better NFL football player than Kingsley was that early in his career. But
yeah.
I also don't know if I actually think we'll see him again this year, barring injury. I'm not sure. The Next Gen Stats tweet from Jesse Newell that we were referring to is that Juwan Taylor did not allow a single pressure across 28 pass blocking matchups against Max Crosby. As you mentioned, 25 of 28 were one-on-one matchups. Crosby failed to generate a pressure on any of his 41 pass rushes. The most pass rushes without recording a pressure in a game this season. Last time Crosby was held without a pressure was week 9, 2022. Now, I do think that Crosby had at least one that ended up being one of those Wanya holds, and there may have been another penalty that wiped one away, but don't quote me on that. The big headline there is what a day for Juwan Taylor. Let's go to another guy that you didn't quite feel the vitriol to list him as a loser over on ChiefsOnSI.com, but you mentioned just a second ago that wasn't a great game despite having a couple of a first down and then the touchdown. Xavier Worthy had the up and down performance, that contested catch that you mentioned when DeAndre Hopkins was open. And I think in future weeks, he's probably the priority there. At least I would be happy to see him be one of the primary targets. But also maybe that ball got there a little bit late. Not really Xavier Worthy's game. Another misconnection elsewhere. Where do you put Xavier Worthy right now? Seeing how the offense is evolving a little bit. A lot of Kelsey, now Hopkins, more Noah Gray than previously thought. Where does Xavier Worthy fit in that recipe with yesterday in mind?
Yeah, I think the difference between what a lot of people think Xavier Worthy can be, and I'm included, I've been really high on him since the Chiefs drafted him, and what he is right now, you're starting to see the difference.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And there was that play where he ran the out route or whatever it was, and Mahomes kind of, I think, wanted him to be a little bit further upfield, and they missed the connection there. And then first half, I believe there was one drop mixed in that wasn't the third down play.
Yeah.
You have to take the layups, I think, and he's going to get a lot of those just because he's in an Andy Reid offense. The problem is, they had the one game last week where Mecole Hardman got some of the reps that you would like to probably see Xavier Worthy. And personally, Hardman is great at the jet sweeps and the orbit motion, so I think it works. It's not a complaint whatsoever. That's one thing he's really good at in the Chiefs offense. Worthy is not going to be the contested catch guy. He still doesn't have the timing built up with Mahomes, and I think part of it's on the quarterback as well. We can blame Patrick Mahomes every once in a while without, you know, being too critical of his play. So the timing is off. They've missed each other, whether it's not shallowing out a route or going deeper down the field, or Worthy just not fighting through contact. And there was the rep last week against San Francisco. The defender kind of got tangled up, just got his hands on him, and Worthy just fell down. He is not playing strong through contact right now. He got lit up near the sideline and had to take a little bit of a break. So he needs to get more physical, better hand fighting, max out whatever frame he can do. But that's not an overnight thing. It's not going to be, hey, let's coach you up and give you a bunch of protein powder. He can say, hey, is this, you know, 2 pounds of muscle going to help you?
Yeah.
It's a stylistic thing. So he's still scoring touchdowns. The Chiefs got him that little confidence builder late.
Yep.
But you're looking at Juju Smith-Schuster as maybe the volume type guy. When he gets back to DeAndre Hopkins, obviously that role is going to grow, and I think everyone should be very excited. And then Travis Kelce not quite getting 12 targets and 10 receptions per game, but being the top option. So I think the Chiefs can insulate Xavier Worthy and put him in good positions to succeed, because right now when he goes outside of his primary skill set, it just hasn't worked out so far.
I think it might have been Seth that sort of connected it to 2022 MVS also. Not 2023 MVS, everybody. Keep your cars on the road, not in ditches. But the idea of deep shots, stretch the field, downfield, and quick screens that let you use that speed and acceleration that doesn't require you to have to be exactly on time with Mahomes or whatever. That way of shortening his playbook as a rookie in this offense, I think, would make a lot of sense. Last thing for you, Jordan. I'm giving you the entire field here. Where is there a position or a player that we haven't talked about or that we're not collectively talking about enough that you think, oh, this guy is going to play a really big role or a bigger than currently understood role in November, December, January, and we need to be putting his name out there now?
Yeah, I think I have a good one and a bad one, if that
yes,
is okay.
Absolutely.
One that I'm worried about and one that I feel good about. And this one isn't someone that people aren't talking about, because they clearly are and he's deserved it. But, man, I cannot shake what Noah Gray's been doing for the Chiefs offense. And, like, the box score stats, you look at it, 4 catches, 66 yards, the career game against San Fran, 3 for 23 last week. But every time Patrick Mahomes gets him the ball, good things happen. And every time he gets him the ball, he's coming down with it. And whether it's a little bit further down the field, whether it's a short dump off that he's catching, whether it's the ball that either got tipped or went through Xavier Worthy's hands,
yes,
or maybe both.
Yes.
And right into Noah Gray's hands. Like, the playmaking with him, you can start to see, and this is even without mentioning Hollywood Brown, if he comes back late December, early January, the offense with Kelce primary, DeAndre Hopkins primary, Juju and Worthy as the support options, Mecole Hardman maybe getting a little bit, Justin Watson maybe getting a little bit. Noah Gray is before those two guys, I think, pretty confidently. And you're going to be seeing him continue to mix. Now, on the flip side, the player that I continue to worry about And this is without even mentioning Nausee Johnson, who got a concussion.
I thought for sure it was going to be Nausee Johnson. Yeah, I thought for sure.
And technically it is, but if Joshua Williams is on the field,
yeah.
I just don't feel great. He's not taking care of business on special teams, let alone on defense. I think that the ceiling with him is the highest of any non-Jalen Watson guy out there, I guess McDuffie as well. But if you're choosing between Roland Wallace, Johnson, Williams, the upside is there. The floor is also really, really bad, though. And Nausee Johnson has the built-in, I don't want to say excuse, but context of, okay, he's still pretty young in his career games-wise, still working his way back from the ACL. He doesn't have the hundreds and hundreds of snaps that Joshua Williams does.
Yeah.
Williams doesn't have that excuse. He is supposed to be, you know, flourishing, be the breakout guy people thought he'd be coming into the year. So the combination there between Johnson and Williams, I don't necessarily feel too confident in either. I think that if the Chiefs make any move before Tuesday at 3 p.m., cornerback would probably be that spot.
Only thing I'll add is that I'm a little bit annoyed that Noah Gray didn't technically have three catches on two targets, because I feel like the box score should have reflected the fact that that was an Xavier-worthy target and a Noah Gray catch. But I'm with you across the board. And as always, go check out ChiefsOnSI.com for occasional contributions from me, and by and large, Jordan Foote doing all the real work. Jordan, appreciate you as always. We'll do this again in a couple of weeks.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Go get dusted by some 13-year-olds in Call of Duty. It's Jordan Foote. Follow him on Twitter, @footnoted. Read his work, ChiefsOnSI.com. We are overdue for a break. It's because, don't nod at me, James. I know how overdue we are for a break. Listen, Andy Reid got better at clock management. I can too. You know, Josh Uche wore 5-5 in New England. Mambo number 5-5? Am I missing? Is there a 55 on the roster currently? Who am I blanking on? I feel like there's usually a 55, but that went D Ford to Frank Clark.
Frank Clark. I don't know if there's a 55 at the moment.
The fact that I can't immediately produce who it is makes me doubt that there is, but it's a good number. Ah! Swayze Bozeman, you may be getting a little direct deposit from the practice squad on behalf of Joshua Uche if he would like 55 back. We'll see. I don't think that's going to be quite as big a deal as it was for DeAndre Hopkins. Although, maybe a little switcheroo happens there, as yes, Swayze Bozeman is currently practice squad linebacker, who Specs had some nice things to say about during training camp. He's the current 5-5 on the Chiefs practice squad. This is 96.5 The Fan. I'm Josh Briscoe here in the Josh Briscoe Show. Thanks again to Jordan Foote. Follow him on Twitter @footnoted. And read his work at ChiefsOnSI.com. That's Chief. I said that way too fast for him in the note. I say it all the time. ChiefsOnSI.com. It's a part of the Sports Illustrated On SI Network. And there's a whole network of us there covering all of the teams across the league, across several leagues. But Jordan and I co-pilot the Chiefs site on a day-to-day basis, as you've perhaps heard the fellows mention, as I've been a guest across the station here over the last few weeks. I was on with Fesco and Dusty and with Carrington today because a lot of things happen, things getting shuffled around, and there's a lot of Chiefs news, which is reflected by the fact that I feel like I've gotten to maybe half the things that I thought we would actually talk about here today. So I'm going to do something. I don't have time. All right, quick take. Here's my quick take. Okay, I have a whole Patrick Mahomes thing that I wanted to unpack. And I went way too long last segment. Here's the quick thing that I think is almost as important as the Patrick Mahomes thing. The broadcast yesterday, not necessarily the production or the replays or any of that. The broadcast crew and the uniforms, as good as it gets. Maybe literally. There's some Chiefs-Chargers uniform matchups that I might have just ahead of even Chiefs-Raiders. But the broadcast booth, I think the NFL is blessed with and they have all the money in the world and not that many games going on compared to other sports and other leagues, obviously. The NFL has a lot of very good broadcast crews. If you forget that, just click on a random, I don't know, SEC network game at some point. Oh, yeah, they got to have a lot of crews that can do this. Pretty much every NFL broadcast crew is at least good at that job. But I really think that Kevin Harlan might end up being the best ever period, across sports, football, basketball, at any level, any frequency. He has a musicality to the way he does play-by-play, his tone, his understanding of the moment. He's just spectacular. And Trent Green, a real Kansas City-friendly Booth as well. It's not the only reason that I'm bringing them up as the absolute best of the best, but it's true. Trent Green is as good as anybody at picking something from the play that just happened and saying, hey, so this thing here, here's what happened on this, and here's what DeAndre Hopkins brings, or here's what Juwan Taylor did, or here's what Max Crosby did. He's as good as anybody at pointing out something, explaining it while the replay is going on, and then getting out of Harlan's way in time for him to absolutely sing a song for the next down. They're fantastic. I don't think that's terribly controversial around here. Here's what is. I think the Chiefs' best overall uniform combination you saw yesterday. White over red. Red helmet. White jersey. Red pants. White socks. I think it's the best look. It's not the same thing as the best jersey. If you want to wear a Chiefs jersey and you stick with the red, I understand. I'm inclined to go alongside with you there. The all whites are iconic. I think the red pants are a special visual break. Red, white, red, white. It's perfect. The Raiders' home uniforms are perfect. And the all red uniforms stink.
I can't agree with you more on that take.
I am so far away from the microphone, I was afraid it would explode.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more on the all reds. I like the iced out myself, but
they're great. They're great. They're fabulous. The Chiefs don't need an alternate. They don't need a yellow. Just have your red and white and your all whites as your alternate. I'm totally good with that. I love to see the all whites a few times a year.
I wish they would take it a little bit further with the helmets.
I'm open.
And ice out the helmet logo as well. But I think that would look crispy, and I'll leave it at that.
That's the only alternate that I'm really entertaining for the Chiefs right now, is if you did the white helmet. Maybe if there's no arrowhead, but it was just the KC. Because having the white-backed arrowhead on there might be weird. It doesn't matter. I'm with you, James. I think that's a respectable, okay take. But as I get away from the microphone to safety, I just don't like the all-reds very much. They're my fourth choice. I just think the monochrome reds and Snickers are overrated. Why is everyone always so mad at me? I can start doing the radio show, or I could just wrap along with this, and both are very appealing. I'm not going to do it. I almost did it. I almost came in on wax like a candle, but I'm not going to do it. I'm Josh Briscoe. I'm not here to rap. I'm here to talk about football by and large, although I will rap upon request. Maybe next week, James, I'll give you a specific safe for radio song that I'll just really, I'm sure, like, you know what? I don't want to step on Cody's toes. I just realized that I was just sort of reverse engineering a large portion of Cody Tapp's bit there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit, but I was kind of looking forward to it.
maybe I just need to tell Cody that I am accessible for a rap verse. Whenever inspiration strikes him next, sure. He wants to do a little mashup with me.
Yeah,
I'm sure that would be.
Y'all should collaborate.
You can
get something real special going.
If there's anything I've ever thought, it's how do I get a feature on a Cody Tapp original? I don't. Maybe not. I am Josh Briscoe. That's James Howe on the other side of the glass. And I'm going to do the Patrick Mahomes segment now. If everybody's okay with that, I'm going to try to get it done in a nice tight period of time because, you know, sometimes we forget to talk about the greatest quarterback currently living or ever to live. It's been a weird season for Mahomes, and we've seen over these last couple of weeks now, in particular against the Niners and Raiders, some vintage Mahomes moments, which is a funny thing to say about a man who's 29, I believe. Vintage is not really the point. It's the stuff that makes you think, ah, yes, that was a Patrick Mahomes scramble, escape, find, down the field.
Mahomes magic.
It's the Mahomes magic. And for the fact this was Mahomes matriculation through most of the first 5-6 weeks of the year, certainly after Rashee Rice got hurt and all of that got tighter, the magic is the thing that we're kind of looking around waiting for. Like, it's the line in The Incredibles where Mr. Incredible yells at that little kid on the tricycle. He's like, what are you looking at? He goes, I don't know. Something amazing, I guess. That's what we're all doing to Patrick Mahomes all the time. And lucky for us, he is sort of Mr. Incredible. I'm going to describe a sequence here real quick, and reminder that everything I'm about to describe came after Xavier Worthy tipped a football to Noah Gray, just for a reminder for how fragile this all is. This was a pretty big Chiefs win. It was really a two-possession win until the Raiders' final effort there. The defense was playing a little prevent, whatever. This wasn't as stressful as other recent Chiefs games. At the 13-minute mark, just under, the Chiefs had the ball at their own 44, up by 4, 17-13. The offense had not put up any sort of eye-popping numbers. The Raiders were hanging around. It was 3rd and 12. 3rd and 12, up 4 in their own territory, nearing midfield. No points guaranteed here. If they don't convert, they're punting it back to the Raiders. Ultimately, Chiefs still would have won this game, I believe, but the vibes would have been very different. And what happens on 3rd and 12? The pocket's okay. Wanya Morris loses to the inside, gets reset. Mahomes climbs and moves left. Then he escapes through the gap between Joe Tooney and Creed Humphrey. He takes off, and he gets the first down. Trent Green said on the broadcast, cover two man, nobody's watching Mahomes. He has room to make that play. They go on to eat a bunch of clock. Kelce converts a third down. Worthy ends up losing that ball short of the goal line. They settle for a field goal. Red zone field goals are by and large the bane of my existence. That one didn't really bother me in the grand scheme of things because it made it 4-7. So instead of giving Vegas the ball down 4, even look, you could have gone for it down there, and if you don't get it, they got to go 94 or 5 yards, whatever it was going to be. Let's say 96 and a half yards, like 96.5 yards. Wherever they end up getting the ball to. But you make it 7, you give the Raiders the ball back, and then shortly thereafter, Mike Pinnell pops the ball out. The game feels totally different. It was smart football, clock running, business as usual to ice the game after that. The Worthy touchdown basically did ice it at 27-13. It would have been more fun if the final score was 27-13, but that's, I'm not sweating a garbage time touchdown, essentially. The last play that mattered was that touchdown to Xavier Worthy. All of this context is just to serve as a reminder that on 3rd and 12, Patrick Mahomes had a little bit of time. It was hectic in the pocket, but nothing we haven't seen him navigate before and still deliver the ball downfield. Ultimately, he calls his own number, as he's done so many times in so many big moments. He picks up that first down, and from there on out, the Chiefs close it out as a unit. An incompletion there, a scramble out of bounds that doesn't move the sticks, certainly taking a sack. Any number of options of how things could have gone on a play where it appeared that by the end of it, again, Mahomes needed to rely on his best player, himself. Maybe somebody won downfield, I don't know. But Mahomes called his own number and got one step closer to icing that game that would have had a ton of life left in it when the Chiefs kicked that ball back. Again, you would have been right to have confidence in the Chiefs' defense in that circumstance. You didn't need to, ultimately, because Patrick Mahomes did a Patrick Mahomes thing. Any excuse we have to appreciate those moments and understand that we're witnessing them, I think we should take, and it's really nice. Even as the offense still has some issues, still needs to get the passing game going, how's DeAndre Hopkins in the mix to do that now? He's still Patrick Mahomes, and there's still nobody better. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here at 96.5 The Fan. James, I don't know if you had context for my relationship with this song. It's a little Sugar We're Going Down by Fall Out Boy, if anyone's not 100% confident in the first 2 seconds of that song. I will say I've heard this song a great many times. This song played during my wedding reception, played during a friend's wedding reception a couple weekends ago, and got the people going.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a good Fall Out Boy song, Green Day, you know, those kind of like pop-ish.
Little pop-punk action.
Listen,
some of us were formed in that. Listen to this breakdown. All right, I shouldn't just listen to music and then sing along with it. I've fought that now both of the last 2 segments, but man, that song, you want to play the, like, we don't have time to actually play this game, but you're like 5 albums on a desert island you can never listen to ever again. I don't know why I spend a lot of mental energy on those types of hypotheticals. Maybe that's why I like mock drafts. I don't even really like mock drafts like that, actually. the five albums, you can only listen to these five albums or these five artists or whatever for the rest of your life. I don't care what this says about me. I don't care what any of you think. From Under the Cork Tree, the Fall Out Boy album that has that song, Dance Dance, many other great lesser known ones, that's one of my five. I need to know that at any point for the rest of my life, I can scream Sugar, We're Going Down in the Car. I may do it on the way home just since I didn't fully allow myself to do it beginning this radio segment. It's just unmatched. There are so many other things that with this Chiefs game, game against the Raiders, where the defense stands right now. Last week, I forced myself to say, we're talking about the defense, even though the offense, finally, they set a new, you know, season high in points against the Niners, and the defense really did it again here, folks. I don't know if the final score was a little bit deceiving because the Raiders get that last garbage time score. They also got two absolutely ridiculous short fields. Let me check my math here again on one of the craziest like summaries I've ever seen for a drive. 10 play, 14 yard scoring drive for the Raiders. That occurred back on the Chiefs' fifth defensive effort of the day, early in the second half there, after the punt and the return. Nothing for the defense to do about that. The Raiders get 10 plays, move the ball 14 yards, and settle for a 32-yard field goal. That is, of course, not the immediate next drive the Chiefs' defense forced back on the field a handful of plays later as the Chiefs move backwards and then throw an interception, leaving them first and goal for the Raiders. 0 points. The Chiefs' defense this year, and the most that we talked about the defense tonight has been about Joshua Uche, the Chiefs just traded for. The Chiefs defense in a just world, which we do not live in. Sorry to break it to you, everybody. In a just world, the Chiefs defense would lead most of these conversations. We would talk about Trent McDuffie as much as we talked about Travis Kelce. We would talk about Chris Jones, maybe almost as much as we talk about Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs defense is so good right now, despite missing their number two and currently throughout more than half of the game yesterday, number two and number three cornerbacks. This is the best defense in football right now, I think, right? I don't comb through every other team the same way that I do about the Chiefs, obviously, so I'm always a little bit hesitant to be like definitively, this is the best or worst or whatever, defensive line, secondary, whatever. I think they have the best safety group in the league. They have the best defensive tackle. Yesterday ended up being a little bit of a lesser game for Nick Bolton and a return to form for Drew Tranquil. Leo Chanel is an alien. I'll take that development. Bolton has largely had a pretty good year after a bad start. I wouldn't ask him or really anybody to cover Brock Bowers if I could help it. So I'm not freaking out about that either. Not sounding the Nick Bolton alarm at the moment. It's a defense that, and Trent McDuffie, elite, flatly, stupidly elite. But now the supporting cast is thinning out around him. And we should, again, it should be more credit to Spags and to Dave Merritt than they typically get. And I'm also needing to do more of that. And I already feel like I am here just pounding the table talking about Dave Merritt every chance I get. The offense scores the points. That's where you get your fantasy players from. You know other teams' quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers. You don't know other teams' middle linebackers with the same familiarity. It just happens in the way that we discuss football. We're not all frauds and losers because of it. It's just the thing that happens. But the Chiefs defense perpetually gets less credit for the amount of the game they carry. I'm trying to at least acknowledge that fact as we do move through these discussions. And I think that's only going to become easier and more obvious when Uche arrives and is able to provide another element and another body in this pass rush that they frankly just don't have right now. Him as a pure pass rusher, I think, is going to be an absolute delight. They've already got a lot of other guys with interesting skill sets that are able to take on these different roles that this incredible unit has been able to bring to the table so far. The one big drawback in that game yesterday, obviously Nazi Johnson in the concussion protocol, left the game with a concussion. You get an extra day. Maybe he's back for Tampa. Hopefully he's back after that. If not for the Tampa game, the one player who was sent to injured reserve as a corresponding move to the acquisition of Uche is Jody Fortson. That bums me out. I've been a long time, long lasting fan of the Jody Fortson experience. Fort season is 365 days out of the year, if you believe. And he's obviously just had so much poor injury luck. And we don't have the details still yet, but it was a knee injury. He was quickly put to IR, so you assume that it's something very serious, one of those frequent knee tendon tears that knocks the guy out for the year. He also had more offensive snaps than Jared Wiley did yesterday, and they were both in the high teens in terms of offensive snaps taken. They've run a lot of 13 personnel, and I think they brought Fortson back for a reason. Peyton Hendershot is back on the practice squad now. Maybe he gets elevated. Maybe the Chiefs don't carry four tight ends anymore now that DeAndre Hopkins is here. Maybe when Juju is able to return, that evens those numbers out some. But Fortson was like doing some useful things, and I understand that no box score notes is not the easiest way to make you believe that the third or fourth tight end is having an impact. He got that target in the back of the end zone that went over his head, obviously. But for a wide receiver room, that the only thing I think that Sky Moore did at an above average level, that no longer has the one guy they trusted to block on the outside who wasn't really a receiving threat, going heavier and using more of those extra tight end personnel groups, I think benefited the offense as a whole. Now Fortson's out of that picture. Maybe we get a little more Jared Wiley. Maybe they start to go back to some more traditional 12 personnel sets to live in. I mean, that's still the standard, but it's one less piece. Jody Fortson has always been a great guy to deal with, and it's sad to see another season of his perhaps come to an end due to an injury. This is, though, just the end of the clock for this edition of the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Appreciate James Howell on the other side of the glass. We'll be back not on Monday, but on Tuesday, because Chiefs-Bucks will be right here Monday night. We'll be back on Tuesday at the trade deadline, and then also a whole lot of other things going on. We'll talk about football on Tuesday. Until then, bye, Mom!
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.